Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Chokhmah. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Tuesday, July 26th, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free on the Internet through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at www.whyagain.org. If you go to that page and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book contains the narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for almost 18 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download from that page the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click the link, download it, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again. Absolutely free. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you choose to tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon and Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one, where people have been stepped through the worksheet process on a variety of different topics, and if you listen to those, they can serve as a powerful tutorial to help you get efficient and lasting results from this tool. We help people do all of that soon and often because it frequently leads to comments, questions, answers, testimonials. And if you have any of that to share with us, you can email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org, or you can email Jeannie at jeanie@whyagain.org. That's whyagain.org. And you can, that's an especially good option for people who don't have the ability to call in, be here with us live and call in. Or the number is 563-999-3581. And if you call that number and press 1, it'll put the icon of a hand by your phone number, and I'll turn on the microphone and announce you by your area code. We greatly appreciate when people do that because it helps us live into our intention with this work, which is to be of service. It's far easier to be of service when we get feedback and we know what you're enjoying of the show as we are doing it and or what you need support with in understanding it or applying it in your life. So please remember that we have a Tuesday and a Thursday support group. They're run from 6:30 to 9 p.m. Central Time. They're free. You can donate if you choose, but we've never turned anybody away for want of money. And you can find out all the information you need to join us in either support group on the mindshiftersacademy.org website. And there's a separate page for the login information for each of those days. Again, it's 6:30 p.m. till 9 p.m. Central Time, and we'd love to have you join us and or forward that information to anybody you think might benefit from it. So, the last thing I like to say at the beginning of the show is please feel free to put your hand up at any point in time. If we're in the middle of something, we'll wait until it seems to be a good point of flow for the conversation before we turn on the microphone. But even if we're in the middle of reading something and you've got a comment or a question or you'd like a clarification of something that I'm either reading or discussing, please feel free to raise your hand at 563-999-3581 and press 1. We've been working with the Way of Mastery, and the Way of Mastery was channeled by a gentleman named Mark Hammer, John Mark Hammer. And now he goes by the moniker JM, which is basically the phonetic way to spell J-A-Y-E-M, his first and last initial, or his first initial and his middle name initial. And this work that we've been reading since the beginning of the year, January 10th to be precise, is called The Way of Mastery. And The Way of Mastery was channeled by him from 1994 to 1997. But even before that, there were things he was getting from the... It's been about 35 years now, I think he said, since he's had this experience of getting guidance from an entity, a mind, a collective that identifies himself, themselves as the Christ mind, as Yeshua. And so recently, and that means today, I found out on a Facebook post that he did that he's going to launch a new study for the Christ Mind material. And he's going back to one of the original things that was channeled, which was the Yeshua letters. And so if someone's interested in that, you can find it on Temple, T-E-M-P-L-E, dot wayofmastery.com. And if you're interested in the next level of teaching, he's going to do a deep dive into this, very much the way he did a deep dive into the Way of Mastery, where he was doing Darshan's hour-long teachings, going in depth, just like we've been doing this year with the Way of Mastery, where we'll read a little and or get sidetracked with commentary and then read a little more and make commentary and connections and try to help people really slow down and get the most benefit from the reading and the deeper understanding of not just the words, but the intention of helping you move yourself into an experience that would be radically different than any experience you would have from your family training and your cultural training and your support group training, unless it's guided by these deeper principles, these deeper questioning principles. And so where we left off yesterday in reading The Way of Mastery was in Lesson 16. If you're trying to follow along, it's page 197 in the big blue book called The Way of Mastery. And this work was telling us that you're part of the one mind, the mind of creation. You are the energy of creation expressing in form. And if you knew the truth about yourself and your origins and your connection to the source of creation, you would never fear the creation of money or wealth or abundance. You'd never believe that you must live in lack. But for most of us, we're still clinging to the belief that we are small, that we are helpless and hopeless, that we are a little tiny piece of energy called the egoic mind, and that we're struggling to find our connection to all of creation and what some might call God, and we're not recognizing that the power of creation, the power of to birth planets and grow trees and build birth galaxies, is the same power we're using to create a sense of ourselves as small and weak and helpless and worthless. So it says, so you sit there in your chair and you are there through the power of creation, through the one mind that is acting through you to give you the experience of being where you are. And you are in form, and you are that one mind. And you've created the perception of yourself that includes the experience of being a body-mind, which is separate from all other bodies. But it's just an experience because there is no separation. Obviously, you can look out your window and tell that your body is in one place and the tree is in another and the wall across the room from you is another. And you're creating that experience of separation. And that is what the world, as you see it, is. It's the universe that you're creating with your perception is the attempt to create a reflection that convinces or rationalizes for you that the first fearful thought of separation is the truth of who you are. You are using, or you have been unwittingly using, your physical universe to constantly reflect to you what you think must be the truth, that you are separate from all of creation. Now we're back on the top of page 197 in the blue book, and it says, this world is nothing but a reflection of that thought. Yet even here, the one mind, the mind of creation, the creative energy itself, pervades all things. And the realization of your higher self, capital S self, as part of the creative mind, is closer to you than your own breath and is simply a decision away. Here there is great richness, not found in any other dimension. The richness of the dramas of separation, of seeking, seeking, seeking. For example, one who is seeking will say, well, I've read the Course in Miracles one time and it didn't seem to work. Maybe I'll read it again. Oh boy, that didn't work. Well, maybe I'll go try this form of meditation. No, that didn't work. Well, wait a minute, maybe I'll try Buddhism. Years later, no, that didn't work. Well, I'll try this Christianity thing. Years later, no, that didn't work. Hey, maybe I'll get into drugs. That'll do it. The very energy of seeking is egoic energy. For only the ego can seek. came to me years ago to say, only the ego wants to know God. Only your ego wants to know God, has a yearning to know God. Why? Because you are a part of that mind of creation that you're calling God. And to know yourself more is to know your creator, your source. So when you say, well, I don't know God, I need to find God, I need to go, that's the dream of separation giving rise to that thought that you have to go somewhere or be something different or do something different in order to know the creator or your source. That's why this book says it this way, the very energy of seeking is egoic energy. When you're out looking for something, you've already formed the belief that you don't have it, that you aren't it, that you're lacking something. Only the ego can seek. Pure spirit, the source of you, all creation, can only extend itself in the realization that it is connected to all things. And there's a huge difference between extending what you are and searching for something else. So egoic consciousness plays itself out through the forms of special relationships. And again here, when they use a term in either Course in Miracles or Way of Mastery, and they talk about special relationships, they're really talking about what Dr. Michael Rice talks about when he says a codependent relationship. That is, you make a determination that someone or something outside of you is responsible for your emotions, and you need this interaction with them, and you need them to say and do and be a certain way so that you can get the feeling that you want to have. You believe that people and things outside of you are causing your emotional state. They're causing how you feel about yourself and them. And that's a codependent relationship. That's unhealthy. Why is it unhealthy? Because it can be observed over and over and over again that you're the one inside you with your choice of the focus of your mind energy that creates your experience of life, that creates your emotions, that creates your impressions of your interactions with others. And so it's unhealthy to think that somebody else makes me happy. Somebody else makes me angry. I need somebody else to be and do and say this or to be in this location or that location in order for me to be happy, in order for me to feel loved. So ego consciousness plays itself out through the forms of special relationships. You have a special relationship with your employer. I've got to keep this job or I won't be able to stand it if I lose this job. I won't be able to stand it if I lose this job. I won't be able to stand it if I lose this relationship. I could never tolerate it if I go broke. As though you don't have the capacity to choose for joy, to choose for happiness, to choose for peace, to choose for contentment in your existence every moment. That's the truth of who you are as a creative spark of the one mind. But special relationship has you believing you need an employer, a relationship with your spouse, your lovers, your car, your boats, and your automobiles in order to be happy. From the very first lesson, this book, The Way of Mastery, these three books, The Way of the Heart, The Way of Transformation, and The Way of Knowing, from the very first lesson, they're trying to help us understand that's not the way it works, that all power under heaven and earth is given to you by the power of your thought control. When you shift the focus of your thoughts, when you change the interpretation that you choose for a neutral event and place it on the event, that's what creates your experience of that event. The text goes on and says, and the world plays off of your need for specialness. Right? The world tells you, hey, look at this automobile. Isn't this one sexy? oh, you're going to feel so good when you get into this car. So you seek to create the means to possess that particular automobile. Or you think, wow, if only I had that person as my spouse. Well, you know, I'm really weak and helpless and unworthy, but let me seek that one. I'm going to try and seduce him or her. I'll act as though I am not really poor or lonely and weak and helpless. I'll try to pretend that I'm grand and powerful and masterful, and I'll ruffle up my peacock feathers to attract this person. And so it goes. The world is the reflection of the belief in the need for special relationship. The search for that is the restlessness that you feel. That restlessness that you feel in the mind, it creates the waves of restlessness in the fluids and the subtle energies which are contained within and make up the illusion of the body. The restlessness of the breath, the tightness of the muscles, the loneliness as you rest your head upon the pillow at night, all of this because you believe that you are that body-mind and that you are separate and alone and apart from all others. All of those negative emotional experiences are born from the dream of being separate. The text goes on and says, the infinite eternal stream of communication that occurs throughout creation, unobstructed, becomes lost to your awareness because you're in the dream of separation. You're in the process of convincing yourself that you are a separate body, that you don't have a soul, that you're not connected to your creator. It's a powerful process of creation that each and every one of us uses all day, every day to create our experience of life. And so that last little paragraph, again, is quite important. It says, the infinite eternal stream of communication that occurs throughout creation. You are part of creation. If you exist and you have awareness, you are a part of creation, which means you are part of an infinite eternal stream of communication. And yet, you can buy into the dream of separation and thoughts of lack and smallness and lack of intelligence and lack of resources, and you can obscure your awareness of the infinite eternal stream of communication that occurs throughout all of creation and therefore in, as, through, and around you in each moment. And this book is offering us a way to wake up to the possibility and then step into some experiences and some statements of practice. You might call them mantras, you might call them questioning thoughts, curious inquiries into the depth of possibility. And here's one that they're suggesting. Quote, I am not just this body. I am that one. All caps, that, all caps, one. I'm that one. Pure, unbounded, and undefiled. I am in communication with every rock, every tree, and every time frame that has ever been. Close quotes. Now, the book recognizes, it goes on, it says, and yes, when you begin that thought, it will seem completely insane because you've been on the other side of the fence looking at the reality of your life through your perception from a certain perspective. you've been looking at images your brain shows you of your separation because your eyes can't see the level of energies that connect everything. Right? We were talking about it the other day. I read, your eyes can see less than 1% of the electromagnetic spectrum. Your ears can only hear less than 1% of the acoustic spectrum. So you have this very limited ability to perceive, and from it you've constructed a sense of yourself as separate. Small, weak, separate, hopeless, helpless, etc. And when you do that, it fits what pictures your mind is showing you. But that doesn't mean that's all there is to you. It doesn't make it true. The book says, insanity seems sane to those who are sane, who are insane. So, here's the last segment in this chapter, in this lesson. Here's the end of all seeking. Choosing to live as though you are not the ego. You're not the ego at all. It's not this, you're not just the ego, you're the ego and so much more. You are not the ego. The ego is a constellation of thought that was initiated with the dream of separation, with the play of, I wonder if as part of the one mind, I can have an experience of myself as being separate from myself. So the text reads, but the end of all seeking occurs when one dares to hold within the mind a different thought. You've heard it many times through A Course in Miracles, through many of my other channels. Here's the quote. Quote, only love is real. You are not the body, and your creator are one. You are awake, and you walk this planet as part of the Christ mind. You have the ability to choose love over fear. Only love is real. I am not the body. I and my creator are one. I am awake, and I walk this planet as part of the Christ. I choose love over fear. The text goes on and asks, so what does that mean? Love is pure spirit. Extension, expansion, creation. Fear is contraction, density, false perception, and egoic consciousness. When you choose love over fear, you must decide not to respond according to the momentum of your egoic consciousness. You've got a momentum. You've been trained. You've had experiences in your culture and with your family. They need to be questioned. You need to awaken to that momentum of thought that just keeps churning. Guy Finley would call it a mechanical level of consciousness that just does what it does. Earlier in this chapter it said, egoic consciousness is just going to do everything it can to create more thoughts to keep itself in existence, to keep its existence rationalized and validated. But when you choose love over fear, you must decide to interrupt that process of thought. You must decide to live as though you are not the ego. In this way, what has been formed becomes transformed. You, as form, get transformed. That which pervades and extends beyond what has been formed is transformed. So as you notice, as you learn to watch for, acknowledge, and catch earlier the thoughts of egoic consciousness, that you're small, that you're weak, that you're separate, that you're unworthy, and you stop them, you question them, you stop the momentum, and you choose for love. You choose to wake up to yourself as pure spirit. Then you are transformed. The text goes on and says, the way of transformation then requires that you begin with the acceptance of what is true always. In this lesson, we've brought to you a story, an analogy, a description that can help if you will sit with it. It can help to imprint into your consciousness a remembrance of the very process that you have, in fact, felt and experienced as creation itself in its desire to create, in her desire to create, in his desire to create. Put it any way you wish. The one mind becomes what you perceive as the many, and yet it always remains the one. That is what you are. You are the song of the bird. You are the radiance and warmth of the sun as it touches the skin. You are the skin. You are the awareness of that warmth. You are the thinker of the thought. You are the thought. You are the deed. You are the space from which all thought emerges. You are the wind in the trees. You are the vastness of space. All from the one energy. All from the one mind. We perceive ourselves as different. That doesn't make us different. Dale Ellen Hoffman, when we brought him to town, is it back in 2014 or 2015? We brought him to Woodstock, Illinois. And he had with him a very special device. It was a flashlight with a very special filter, a very bright light with a very special filter that when he turned on the light, there was one big bright light that shined out onto the ceiling or the wall, wherever he would point it. But if he turned a filter on this light, it made it seem like there were 1,000 points of light, like one of those glitter balls, disco balls they used to have. They'd shine a spotlight at it and spin the ball, and it would send these rays of light bouncing all around like there were thousands of points of light moving around the room, when in actuality there was only the one light. That's what we're trying to move ourselves into an experience of. There is just the one mind, and we have been masterfully creating images in our mind of separation, of difference from our brothers and sisters. And we're asking whether or not we will accept the invitation. We're being asked to accept the invitation to be transformed into an awareness that all minds are joined. That you are the song of the bird. That you are the radiance and the warmth of the sun as it touches the skin. That you are the skin. That you are the awareness of that warmth. That you are the thinker of the thought and the thought. You are the deed. You are the space from which all thought emerges. You're the wind in the trees. You're the vastness of space. There's only the one light. It's all the same. There's only appearances of differences. This is why I've come to talk about it this way over the years. People would say, so what's the difference between me and him and but that person is so rageful, and I'm so peaceful, and then I'm so loving, and I'm so this, and I'm so that, or vice versa. That person is so peaceful and patient and loving, and I'm so impatient, and I have my anxiety. What's the value of differences that we see one from the other? The only difference between you and any other person who has ever lived on this planet that makes any sense at all, that has any importance whatsoever. The only difference between you and anybody who's ever lived is the degree to which you can live from the deep realization that we are all the same. There's another koan for you. The only difference between you and anybody who's ever lived is the degree to which you live from the realization that we are all the same. The text goes on and says, you are that one who is eternal. You are the one bold enough to dream the dream of separation without ever losing your perfect unity. You are the one, you are the little drop of milk, experiencing the remembrance of the divine, of the real, of the true, of the one. Your journey is not alone. Even now, you are perfectly awake. For only one who is awake could dare to create the great cleverness and creativity through which you, as a spark of the Creator, become increasingly aware of your higher self, your capital S self, the creation itself diving into creation, creation discovering creation. What a delightful, delightful play. Here then, we begin to let the secret out of the bag. Separation was not because you sinned, Garden of Eden story. It's not because you offended your Creator that you were separate or you have an ability to create a perception of being separate. Separation was not because something terrible went wrong. Separation was just another form of the dance of creation itself, perhaps taken to the extremes, for the Creator seeks the limits of what is unlimited. You've been playing a game of hide-and-seek. You are the one with your eyes closed, leaning against the trunk of a tree, counting, while the fragments of yourself ran to hide. And you are the one who has reached out to discover those fragments and is in the process of doing that. You are the one who has become the many and then has waited to be discovered by that one. You are the soul waiting to be touched by grace. You are the separate one, hiding in the darkness, trembling, and yet wanting the light to find you. Why not begin now, in this moment, by sitting quietly as Christ for 5 minutes and say to the one who is coming, now, from the trunk of the tree, say this to the one who is coming to find you. Quote, I have done a very good job of hiding, but you know, I think it would be a great delight to be found. Find me, dear Creator. Touch me with your grace. Because I am you, I will decide to receive it. In this moment, I choose now to remember that I am the one who has both sought and found. I am the one who has remained perfectly unchanged forever. And I am the one who has perceived myself as having changed, as having sinned, and as having separated from myself. I choose now to join the two parts of myself together. I will be a body-mind upon this planet, dancing, singing, playing, and creating the good, the holy, and the beautiful. I will now open that part of my mind that can think in unlimited ways, that will dare to dream the impossible dream. I am that one who lets the creation live in me now. I and my Creator are one. I am the drop of milk again settling into the fullness of the glass in which my Creator dwells as milk. When I walk with this body upon the earth and I feel the mist of the fog upon my skin, I will say within myself, ah, yes, it's very good. For I am that one with the power to create this body, to create the mist of the fog itself. And the mist of the fog around me is the Creator's presence in which my soul reclines. This world is no longer a burden. This world of space and time is no longer something from which I must escape. Not even sickness or disease is a limitation for me. For wherever I am the presence of love. In this moment, I bring forth love and I bless the world I see. And in this, the creation remembers itself. For beloved friends, the way of transformation must bring you in the end to the quiet recognition that there is only creation as a whole, as a continuous, expanding creative force. Why fear if love is here? There is only love or the dream of fear. Please, peace then be unto you, beloved friends. Friends, because you are part of us. You're part of me and I'm a part of you. Particles of light dancing in the wave of the one Creator, the one mind, the one truth, the actual world. The joke has been on us, and we played it upon ourselves well. Now the time of rejoicing is at hand, and we arise in our individuation, recognizing our oneness. We do so to dance the dance of creation ceaselessly, extending only the good, the holy, and the beautiful. Again, earlier in this lesson, and the lesson before, it says, we can choose to teach only love. How do we do that? By sharing only loving thoughts. It ends by saying, peace be unto the only begotten of the Creator, the Creator's own. Creation is. Amen. That's the truth as we know it at this point in time. That's the last few words of Lesson 16 in the Way of Mastery. And that concludes our review of this lesson, and it sets us up to do whatever we choose. It might be to go back to Lesson 1 or Lesson 3 or Lesson 5 or Lesson 7, where it talks about, you know, the story about the blade of grass and the shadow and the birth of fear. Possible to move on to the next lesson. It's possible to jump ahead. I'm sure various people have done all of those things since we began looking at this work in the beginning of January. And as I mentioned, the work continues and the work deepens. So, how can we support you? What's a comment? What's a question? What's a struggle you're having? What's an answer you might have come to from your own study with this or the Yeshua letters or the way of the servant? If you call that number and press 1, it will let me know that you've got a comment, and we can have a discussion. We can accept your input. We can discuss any questions you have about this or anything else that we've done on this internet show for the past over 11 years. 563-999-3581. I just pulled up the christmind.info page. And because available there are the Yeshua letters. And this is what, you know, began in 1987. And at the beginning of the first lesson, it says, each and every one of you is here for but one reason, to realize the capital T truth and to come home again. All of this work dating back into, you know, 1985, 1987, all of this work for 35 years that John Hammer has been doing, JM has been doing, is for that, to help us realize the deep truth of life at a psychological, spiritual, fundamental existence level. And it started with the Yeshua letters. I think it then went on to the way of the servant, and then it went on to the way of the heart and the way of transformation, which we're reading now, and then the way of knowing, which is the third book in the way of mastery. And all of it is circling around and coming back over and over again to understanding how little we know of life, how little we get access to of the energy of creation because of our senses, and how much more powerful it is to live, how empowering it is to live in the question. It is beyond words powerful to stay open and to ask to be taught by life. So what can you learn by living in the question? Call that number, press 1. Let us know something you've learned. Let us know what we might do to be of service for you. Area code 541, you're in the air. Is this Celinda?
Yes, it is. How are you this morning, afternoon?
I'm doing quite well. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. And I just wanted to share with you a little insight I had. I was sorting through some old papers that I had saved for years and years and years, probably from the 80s, and wondering why I was keeping them. And then I went through them. They were just like one-pagers, you know, like there was a poem written in the 80s called Ambulance in the Valley, which really resonated for me. And then there were all these other short little attempts to explain who we are and how we are and what's going on in the universe, Alfie. And so I realized as I reread them and I remembered about when I had collected them that every one of them was a pointer towards this moment in time. It's like, even though I didn't see the depth in them that I see now when I read them, they were like, again, a different expression of a hologram of what we're studying right here. And I just wanted to share that with you as I reflect and ask and observe in a different way the willingness to give up my stories, quote unquote, because I have been led the whole time. I've been kept safe the whole time. And I just wanted to share that with you. It's just like when you find yourself on the homing path, you don't have to look anymore. You just put one step in front of the other, foot in front of the other, practice, 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 do your worksheets or whatever tools work for you to bring you back to the awareness of what you were reading this morning as we sit in our chair for 5 minutes. And I just wanted to share that with you.
I would agree. It reminds me of the insight I had from the years ago, probably 18 years ago, when I first sat in the Dr. Michael Rice lecture, and he talked about, think about some of the worst things that have happened to you in your life, and then raise your hand if you can pick one of them that's 5 years or more in the past and see how it led directly or indirectly to some of the best things in your life today. And from that moment on, I had this thought buzzing in my head, I don't want to wait 5 years. And I woke up several days later with full-blown realization that if even the worst things in my life that I counted tragedies and catastrophes and horrible, if they've led to some of the best things in my life today, then the little things that I have come up in my day that don't go as I would have planned them, that I say are bad or wrong, they will also be a blessing or lead to something I need to learn or be of benefit to me. And I don't want to wait 5 years to find that out. I don't want to spend 2 or 3 minutes or 2 or 3 hours today upset over it. And so it's what you were just saying. So then I can start the day with, you know, a plan. I'm not just like a rag doll sitting on a couch waiting for the wind to blow me. I've got ideas and goals and plans. And as I head out to do them, if they work out beautifully, great. If they don't, I take a breath and I say, oh, I wonder how this is going to turn out better than I could have planned. And I wonder how this holds a lesson for me that I need to learn to move to the next level. Or I wonder how this is going to set me up to have interactions with people I wouldn't have met any other way. And so I'm on the path, letting it unfold step by step, understanding that I really don't know. And I can't know what's going to be best for me or the world as it unfolds. I can just go with the flow. And I use my mind energy, I use my thoughts, I use my self-direction to the best of my ability, and I also use it to alert myself to the fact that when I'm feeling a negative emotion, I'm the one creating it, and I don't need to keep doing that. If I have a preference for peace, contentment, compassion, generosity, patience, I can choose those energies to focus on and create more of that in my life. And as long as you're on the phone, and I thank you for the call and the thought and the input, I would like to mention that you sent me this PDF of your poem, your 12-line poem.
Right.
That you called Awake or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And the more I read it, the more I thought I would pass along this tip. I think it would be highly preferable for you to redo that PDF and move your commas so that you move your comma so that it shows up in each line right after the word that is the rhyming word for the end of the line. Because
okay.
the way I read things and the way I follow punctuation, I kept stumbling with reading it smoothly until I realized, oh, that's what's happening. I'm putting this emphasis on the word, or I'm pausing. Right, like, for instance, the second line, awake, dear soul, comma. So I pause there, that I may be the grace of life, comma, amazing and free. But if I read it this way, I put the comma after the word be, awake, dear soul, that I may be, grace and life, amazing and free, it flows. And you get that rhythm. And you get that rhythm of, so it's just a little tip. You might want to do it, you might not, but it reads more easily when I mentally put the comma right after the word that's going to rhyme with the word at the end of the line.
Okie dokie, that's a good suggestion. I'll try it that way and see what I think. And also, I'm a walking revision, Dr. Tim. I was telling Michael that the other day, that I just, it seems like every time I turn around, I tweak myself or I tweak something else, and it's kind of a lasting thing now. And I changed a couple of the wording, some of the wordings in it to make it more true to what I'm finding out for me. And so I made revisions of them. I'll go back in and try the commas and see how they feel, and then I will send you a copy of that and see what you think. And also, I have another copy that I made just like it, but I replaced the words that are kind of generic, which I felt would have the widest appeal, regardless of a person's religious upbringing. And I made the second one with the Rahma, Ruha, Yeshua, and also Avun for Creator. And so I thought I'd send that to you, too, to see what you think. For those of us who are following in the Aramaic gospel.
All right. Well, I'd be happy to receive it if you don't want to send it.
Okay.
I'll look forward to it.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Well, you're very welcome and deserving. Anything else you'd like to share with us today?
No, I think I'm good. As long as I just sit in that chair, I'll be okay.
Sit in that chair and know the truth that is true always, as the Way of Mastery would say, that you and your Creator are one and you cannot be separate, and you have all the power of heaven and earth in your thoughts and where you choose to direct them. So, thank you for the call. Thanks for listening. I'm glad it's useful to you. I look forward
thank
to the next time.
Thank you for
time
the blessing. Thank you for the blessing. I felt like that was a benediction. And thank you, sir, for the chat.
You're very welcome and deserving. All right. So I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. And I will welcome Jeannie Wright.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. Welcome.
You're most welcome and deserving. Have a wonderful show.
Thanks. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. And today is Tuesday, July the 26th. 2022, and our call-in number is 563-999-3581, and press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us, and we would love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And while we're waiting on Michael to dial in, I'll invite you to go to the website, whyagain.org. And just look around, click on things, and let me know if you find something that's not working. Put the tools to work in your life. You know, if you go to the website and you click on the Start Here button, it takes you to where, let me multitask here and do it as I'm talking. It'll open up a page. The first thing you'll see is the factors that create perception poster. and chapter 24 of Michael's book, where he walks the character Richard through doing a worksheet. Then it's broken, that page is broken down into individual sections, so it's got headers, and then you'll see little plus signs over to the side. So if you click on the plus sign, then it drops down and then gives you the link of where you can go and what's in that link. Sweetie, you got to wait a minute. I'm talking. Sorry. We've got little one today. We didn't know that we were going to have her. And my son had something come up, and so he asked if we could keep her today. And we were absolutely blessed that she would come visit for a little while. So I see Michael has gotten on now, so I'm going to say welcome, Michael.
Thank you, Michael. Welcome, everybody. Yeah. Delighted that you're here. And the conversation goes on. And if you're out there in this land, we're open for conversation. Been a busy morning already this morning. We unexpectedly have Aria with us, been out working in the garden already this morning, and had a nice rainy night, so the gardens are enjoying the water, the watering that they've gotten. And we've got so many cherry tomatoes that today is my day to make a cherry tomato sauce for the lasagna that we're going to have tonight. So we'll send out psychic pieces of awesome lasagna, these cherry tomatoes. I don't know. I've never made a sauce with cherry tomatoes before, but they're individually like popping a piece of candy, each one that you eat. They're plump and juicy. So I'm looking forward to see just what kind of sauce comes out of it. And something that we're doing is we've started cooking without onions and garlic, which if I was going to cook something, the first thing I did was reach for the onions and start frying up onions. So something that I'm not sure why I never really looked at it that way before. You know, garlic and onions are known antibiotics. And I had shared that recently I made a trip to Boston to do some work with a scientist who's discovered a probiotic formula that is just really profoundly powerful at switching and shifting physiology. And he brought up that if you want to maintain your microbiome, you got to get rid of onions and garlic because they're antibiotic. Which, you know, I mean, I know that, gee, if you got an infection, increase the garlic. It's a natural antibiotic, but I don't know why my brain never really put two and two together there before, but just thinking about the microbiome, which is microlife within, especially within the gut, throughout the whole body, but especially in the gut, putting the onion garlic on every, you know, a couple times a day, not the best thing to do. So I'm having to reinvent our tomato sauce and sort of looking at a number of sources and assembling some new aromatic foods to put in the sauce to the tomato sauce, Richard. And so wish me luck on that venture. And the fact of growing our own food has really been a delightful thing to do, sort of, you know, with the fact that at Heartland, you know, for 30 plus years, we've always done fresh and raw food so that people get as close to the earth and the food that they're eating as possible. And now actually getting hands in the earth, which is something I've never done before, and I'm enjoying immensely the learning. And you know, the last few days have been spent building large compost bins where we're going to be creating still more soil. We're probably from day one, almost 3 years ago now, that's about probably 6,000 pounds or so of soil that we built. And our gardens are just loving it. I mean, even the stuff we started, you know, building, we started with zero soil in our third garden this spring. And the food is just popping out of it, just gigantic and tasty and pretty awesome. But the insight that has struck me so powerfully from doing that is that our culture by and large, grows food or what they call food. And you know, it's kind of like silly to even think it's possible, but they grow food in dirt. And, you know, commercial farming to such a great degree, especially if they're doing GMO crops, first thing they do is they pour 10 gallons. I mean, think about it, 10 gallons of toxic glyphosate, which it amazes me. I mean, they're awarding multi-million dollar awards for cancer as a result of glyphosate, but it's still on the shelf at, you know, just about every store around the country. And it's just, it boggles my mind. But when you think about it, and you're pouring 10 gallons of glyphosate on every acre before you plant seeds, the earth is dead. It's dirt. It's not soil. It's dirt. How can you expect to get life from something you've just murdered, slaughtered, massacred with chemicals? It's just bizarre. So one of the things we're paying close attention to, and I thank YouTube University for being there, because we've just watched endless hours of videos on soil and building soil and how to nurture the life in soil so that the life in the soil can nurture the food and grow something that has all those live components in it. And as I think about fake food, you know, with sophistry, we talked in the past about sophistry and that the sophists, Greek philosophers who traveled around Greece working with the wealthy, the children of the wealthy, teaching them how to lie and make their lies look true, teaching them to produce phony results but make it look so good that everybody's fooled. And just, you know, when I think about what agribusiness is doing, billions and billions of dollars, what agribusiness is doing is totally and completely slaughtering the soil so that all there is dirt left, and then filling it with chemicals to try to make this lifeless thing, a fruit or a vegetable, or the animal that feeds on them, into something real, which on its face is absolutely silly. So, you know, we're making a shift more and more of what we're eating is totally coming out of the garden. And, you know, I used to think, oh, wow, it takes so much time. And you know what? It takes a lot of time. But then there are health benefits to just getting your hands in the soil, part of life. It's pretty amazing. So we're going to make our first homemade tomato sauce without onions and garlic today. Cherry tomato sauce. And see how that turns out. We'll let you know. And, you know, when we do an intensive at Heartland, we've had gardens there over the years, you know, several thousand square feet of gardens, and grown a lot of food. But getting a chance to get your hands actually in it and on it is really quite a privilege. And watching these things just, you know, put a little hole in the earth, you drop a seed in it, and out of that little hole in the earth comes wealth. And how cool is that? And, you know, our whole culture is like, no, go to the store and get that stuff. But when you look at the way commercially produced so-called food is grown, it really perhaps shouldn't even merit the word food. And it's an important part of the healing process. You know, there are people saying, back to the scriptures, it's what comes out of a man's mouth, not what goes into it. And that's true, but they weren't working with agribusiness back then. There wasn't much you could do to food 2,000 years ago to make it toxic the way that, you know, we were sold this bill of goods. I can remember the television ads, better living through chemistry. And it's such a sophist's idea that, you know, the Sorcerer's Apprentice can make up something better than the original. So when you think about what you take into your mouth today, different world than 2,000, 3,000 years ago, it sure can make a difference what you put in your mouth. And if you're eating nutrition-free food, there are factors, energetic factors, they call them vitamins and minerals, that contribute to the health, the growth, and the stability of the cell. And if those factors are missing, then the cell, missing factors that it needs, cannot function fully. And in fact, I think one of the reasons why people engage in eating a junk food diet is because there's an unconscious desire to not face what's being carried around inside. And when one engages in behaviors that weaken physiology, you know, the junk food of the culture, engaging in that sophist answer to nutrition leaves one weakened, and in a weakened state, one can more easily hide things from themselves that want to be looked at and dealt with. So I think people, you know, they don't want to feel something, don't want to deal with something. Hey, fill your face with sugar. Fill your face with nutrition-free food. And if you do that, it makes it easier and easier to hide, to lock away, to dissociate from the pained content of the mind that if you were at full vitality, you wouldn't be able to hide from yourself. So that's one of the reasons why we've always done with our intensives a total fresh and raw dietary regimen. You know, people would come to Heartland and they would be somewhat shocked, usually, in the first few days when they said, we're not going to eat any dead animals for, you know, this 16-day or this 65-day intensive. I don't know if I can do that. And then, you know, the food regimen that we have, and thank God for Ari and holding Ari in a blessing. You know, for over two decades, Ari was just always there for Heartland and created these awesome fresh and raw food programs that even the deepest diet of the mole meat eater would come and just love the food. In fact, I've had many over the decades, I've had many people who are, you know, real, you know, give me my meat every day. And after having been at Heartland, have started to shift their lives toward eating a more vegetarian-oriented dietary regimen. Which, you know, incidentally, if you have any concerns about global warming, if you've been looking at the fires, the storms, the, you know, crazy things that are happening with weather around the globe, if that concerns you at all, and there's something you'd like to personally do, the number one, the biggest thing you can do is start to eradicate, you know, even if it's just once or twice a week. Or, you know, I know when I was a kid, I mean, my mother was a stay-at-home mom, and you know, three meals a day she had meat on the table, and I think she would have felt herself deficient if she hadn't done that. That's what I was raised with. And, I mean, it's a shocker for me now when I think about it, some of the stuff that I ate. And, I mean, you couldn't stuff a piece of dead, basically decaying flesh into my mouth if you paid me to take it today. One time I was in the restaurant business. I had a steakhouse where we specialized in steak and lobster and prime rib. And I thought that was food. Now I go like that. You couldn't stuff that in my mouth if you tried. But the, you know, I mean, to put a pound of meat on a plate, people who aren't involved have no idea what's going on there. I've never looked at it. But, you know, just to put 1 pound of meat, you know, you go to, you know, one of these fast food joints where they sell you beef that's raised on corn, which beef cattle have never eaten as a dietary regimen, and it totally destroys the structure of the meat that's there. But to put 4 of those quarter pounders on a plate takes 5,000 gallons of water, fresh water. Here we are in a culture that's almost on the verge of fighting weather wars, especially out west. And you scratch your head, and what if there was not, if there were not subsidies for meat production, what would you have to pay for those 4 quarter pounders just for the 5,000 gallons of fresh water that it used to produce them? You know, that's the water taken up to grow the grains or whatever it is they're feeding them, the water for the cleaning, you know, the slaughtering, the preparation, 5,000 gallons of water per pound. And so if you do have a concern and would like to see something happen with climate, simplest and biggest thing you can do is, if you're a meat eater, now I wouldn't suggest the average meat eater, especially a heavy meat eater, shift over, you know, overnight and say, oh, well, okay, I'm going to become a vegan. I wouldn't suggest that. Because one of the things that happens, you know, there's a lot of conversation about protein, and, oh, you got to get your protein. And oftentimes as a vegetarian, people say, well, how do you get your protein? Well, actually, if you're eating a well-balanced, and yes, there are a lot of sick vegetarians and vegans, but they're the ones who live out of the so-called health food store that are eating health food junk food as their basic regimen. They're not actually eating a proper balanced diet. And yes, there are some very sick people there, but the amount of protein that the human body needs, there's plenty of it in a straight-up vegan dietary regimen. And if someone's a meat eater and shifts overnight to a vegan diet, you know, one of the things, the big projects for a body that's eating a lot of meat is it has to adapt and learn how to throw away a lot of protein, like a ton of protein every day. The average meat eater, the body has to throw off. And, of course, decaying flesh doesn't smell very good if you think about what the bathroom smells like if you're a meat eater after using it. You just might want to think about, why is that decay smell there? Maybe the body isn't meant to have things decaying in it. Maybe digestion is what's designed to occur. But if the stuff is pre-rotted before it goes into the body, and then the body has to deal with it and throw off a great deal of protein. And if one changes and moves overnight to a vegetarian diet or a vegan diet, then the body's still throwing away that protein. The truth is, in a proper vegetarian meal, there's all the protein you could possibly need. Broccoli, you know, beans. Beans have more protein per pound than a piece of steak. But then there's not a lot of money selling beans. Pretty cheap. The money is in flesh. And so Madison Avenue has sold us a bill of goods. You need all this protein. You've got to eat all this meat and these eggs and this fish and this dairy. And now the chemicalization of the food chain. Start moving toward a vegan or at least a vegetarian diet. And the earth will thank you forever, because the resources that are being saved, again, it is the major step that each human can take to make a major contribution in, as one individual, to make a major contribution in the challenges that we face with what's going on with these weather changes and global warming. Sadly, some of the businesses that are knowingly behind global warming have known for decades it's been going on and spending millions of dollars to hire what look like real scientists to proclaim, nothing to look at here, folks, no problem. And some of their secret documents come out, and lo and behold, they've known for decades and been covering it up. So it's a place to go and to think about what factors there are in different foods that support life in the human's form. And having those things grown on live soil, soil that has the organisms in it that it is that the food is designed to grow in symbiosis with, is what produces real nutrition. To extract nutrients from soil, from dirt, where the live organisms do not exist, and therefore pulling the nutrients out of the soil is basically impossible. Now, that hasn't been a problem until the chemical business came along and started selling their product in order to sell us Madison Avenue's idea that we'd live better through chemistry. And you look at the pesticides and the chemicals being used to toxify the earth, to kill the soil, again turned into dirt. It's just bizarre. So the food regimen, you know, there are several different categories of foods that we really haven't been educated about in our culture. You know, there are foods that are builders. They're the proteins. But if you get too much of them, your body's got a challenge getting rid of the excess protein. And a meat-based diet, some of you primarily, don't put vegetables on my plate. It's a lot of work to get rid of that excess protein. But there are foods that are builders. They are the foods that provide the proteins that are built into the cells that are strong. But then the factors that the vegetarian end of things inject into the food, the anthocyanins, the vitamins, the minerals, the nutrients, there's such a wide variety that are still just being discovered. And a soil that is alive, feeding nutrients in a way that can't come from dirt, is a really important part of giving this energy field that we call a body-mind unit all of the energetic factors that it needs to develop the complexity that allows our lives to be vital and to really empower what humans are possible, are capable of, and what's possible for us as human beings. So you might do some research in that regard. If global warming is a thought for you and you haven't really looked, that's a powerful thing to do. And beyond that, of course, keeping this human organism functioning in relationship to what it's designed for is the view of this work, and to recognize, you know, the easiest way I know to determine what this human form is designed to incarnate, is designed to embody, is designed to express, and go back to its beginning and check out everywhere you go that you find a beginning of life. You find the presence of love. You hold that newborn child, and it's really clear what the governing energy is. And we've got such sophistry that most people have been tricked that, well, without a little rage, without a little hatred, without a little vengeance, it's really difficult to maintain yourself in the world today. And the truth is, they're the energies that literally kill. They're the energetic patterns that degrade the tissue structure in which they're stored and make life difficult, perhaps right up there next to impossible. so we're here to focus on all ends of the process of living a life as a true human being, and in particular, to bring the tools that allow unloading the energetic patterns that have, you know, just so disastrously taken over our culture. You know, you just look at the political discourse today. You look at the hate. You look at the rage. You look at the threats. You listen to the words being used by people who proclaim themselves to be leaders. And you realize that the words lead the creative process. And if we're going to truly live as human beings, then the words based in rage and guilt and grief and hostility and fear and fraud don't have a place in the human, in the human verbal system, in, you know, the energetic frequencies that come from those patterns of hate and fear are a disaster for human beings. And yet they're so pervasive that most people are raised up in a world where, you know, the rage conversation, the degrading conversation is just kind of part of the game, as though those things are natural, and they're anything but natural. So our objective is to provide the tools, you know, the focal point. You know, way back in my training days as a naturopath, and, you know, when I first started studying naturopathy, I was a dyed-in-the-wool meat eater. And then I started to understand from a medical point of view that dead decaying flesh doesn't have a place in this structure, and neither does hate and fear, anger, rage, guilt, and grief have no place in a healthy human form, no place whatsoever. And that's the motivator in terms of my own health that began me making the search or engaging in the search for where are the highest levels of healing. And what became clear to me over years of working in the arena was that some of the highest, the most profound levels of understanding of how this energy system is designed to work, how its control mechanisms operate, how its output is modulated, comes out of the first century Aramaic language in the teachings of this man, Yeshua. And not, you know, the name some people aren't familiar with, popularly the man is known as Jesus. But I'm not talking anything to do with religion. I'm talking about the simple operation of the human mind, what the human mouth has to do with health, and how to live a fulfilling life. And to do that, one has to address and remove the patterns of hostile, fearful thought and speech from their own structures, from their own lives, which oftentimes means recreating the whole environment that one lives in. Because the energetic inputs from the environment, to a great degree, control what the cell is doing on the inside of the structure. And so the core of the highest understanding of healing, as I see it, is this first century Aramaic idea of forgiveness, which is why I've dedicated the last 40 plus years of my life to uncovering and really understanding the implications of that process of forgiveness, and realizing that forgiveness is a process of removal. It has nothing to do with the Greek idea that we've been fed that we should let other people off the hook because we're in pain. If we're in pain, there's an energetic pattern in us that doesn't belong. That's all pain is doing, is just warning us about this pattern. And so the technology that was developed 2,000 years ago of the mind and of forgiveness is light years beyond anything that is comprehended today in the realm of psychiatry, psychology, light years beyond any of it. Unfortunately, you know, the Greeks kind of dumbed it down. The Greeks, you know, eradicated the basically the tools and the how-to. In fact, you listen to many people who've worked with these ancient teachings, and they come up with things like, well, you're just a hopeless, helpless sinner. You can't do anything, so just forget it. And that's such a silly message to give a human being. And then when they turned forgiveness into a process by which you get to blame everybody else for what's going on inside of you, for your pain. And then if you're in pain, you get to let them off the hook for your pain, which is one of the silliest ideas I've ever heard. To recognize that if you're in pain, there's a warning signal that's telling you that there's something going on inside of you that shouldn't be going on inside of you. The forgiveness technology developed 2,000 years ago is how to remove yourself from those patterns of grief and rage and sadness and hatred and vengeance and blame and return to the truth of who you are. So that's what we're here to do. We're here to support you returning to the truth of who you are. And that's our commitment. And so if there's any way we can support you in these tools, if you're not using the tools at this point, if you haven't engaged in the forgiveness process, we invite you to go to our website, whyagain.org. It's whyagain, A-G-A-I-N.org. In the upper left-hand corner of the homepage, you'll see a link that says Start Here. Click that button and start reading. Some 20,000 pages or so later, if you go through the whole website, you will have a very thorough knowledge of the real core tools of healing, and in particular, the process of forgiveness. We have an app. If you go to your app store and type in the words Heartland, H-E-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, Aramaic, A-R-A-M-A-I-C, forgiveness, you'll see there the world's only forgiveness app, the only app in the world that truly shows you precisely step by step how to collapse perceptions based in hostility or fear, access the root of those perceptual energies, and remove them from your structure. The app's free. It was purposely designed to be very secure and to make sure that when one engages in using the app, that it's totally and completely private. The app, in order to operate it, asks only for one permission, and that is to use the internet. It doesn't have all the permissions. You see some apps, you open them, and it wants to be able to dial your phone. It wants to be able to access your memory. It wants to be able to, you know, send texts, it wants to be able to reconfigure your phone, I mean, make calls, crazy stuff. Only one permission required just to be able to use the internet to function. And then if you do the worksheet process and you want to print, save your result, it will ask for one more permission, and that is to be able to save things to your hard drive. But otherwise, it's been made totally secure, no other permissions required whatsoever. You can do the forgiveness worksheet on the website as well, or you can download the worksheets, of course, and print them off on your own printer and engage in the process. So we're doing everything we can possibly do to make these tools available on a global scale. Appreciate your support if you engage in supporting us and putting it out there, making it available. And so, Miss Jeannie, do we have anybody there in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
Well, she doesn't have her hand up, but Sarah had said she was going to call in, and she is on the switchboard, so I'm going to turn her microphone on and see if she's available to talk. Welcome.
All right, I hear that sweet little voice in the background.
Hello. Oh, yes, I hear Aria. Not my sweet little voice.
She's here. Your sweet little voice, too. Welcome. How are
well,
you, young lady?
Well, I'm doing okay. I've been doing a lot of processing, and so I'm kind of in that state of confusion, and I'm not sure if my questions are going to, like, later, afterwards, I might be like, oh, well, that was it. I already knew the answer to that, but I couldn't see it because I was in, like, this state of confusion. So,
it's a good place to be.
Yeah.
Not always
yeah,
Dr. Feelgood, but a good place to be rather than thinking we know when we don't.
Yep. I agree that is a better way of being. But okay.
So that still point session.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
No,
I was
I'm
just
going
to say the still point session, then the two follow up, the extra session that we did. There was certainly a lot of stirring happening, a lot of energy moving for everybody. So delighted that you're in that state of being stirred and ready for the next level. How can we support you?
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, and then even after, so we did that other one on Saturday, and that stirred up more things, which was very helpful. But so my kind of more general question is that, so kind of related to that, it's because, you know, stirring up quite a bit, working through quite a bit, having a lot of, a better understanding of past things within me that were occurring, and kind of working through that and realizing, oh, I need to cancel that goal and so on and so forth. So
right.
Within that, going through all this, I'm also kind of feeling a little like drained, and like I need time to just rest, kind of, so to speak, and let it kind of
I hear you.
Absorb. So, but then at the same time, as you know, I'm on a timeline crunch. So I don't have
I
a ton
you.
Of time. So I was wondering if you have any advice on how to manage that, how to tell when is it going to be a negative thing to go ahead and push through and try to do more, or how do I get to a point where I, you know, am able to go ahead and do the next work I need to do?
Well, here's my take, is when you realize the complexity of this integrated energy field, I mean, literally, that holds the memory of 1,000 generations. And, you know, we sit here at the end of this process with a mind that sees a pinpoint piece of information from time to time. And when I choose to take that pinpoint information that's going on and it's filled with pain, and I choose to step into the undoing process, you know, when you start taking some of these major issues, especially if there are issues that have been going on over the period of, you know, perhaps somebody's whole lives, then you realize that you're taking apart, quite literally, energetically, a very complex energy system, and then having to adjust it, clean out some of the trash, and reassemble it. It takes a lot of energy to do that. And, you know, probably one of the biggest pieces missing in the arena of healing in general is that most people don't give themselves the time that they need to really deal with things and to allow rebuilding and recuperation before they're on to the next project. And I certainly understand the demands that life has, but I just, you know, offer that if you see yourself in the middle of doing some major pieces of work in your life, give yourself the space to allow the energetic process to complete itself before rushing off in, you know, in a big loaded, you know, I have to get things done. And, of course, balancing a busy life with doing your inner work is quite a challenge. But, you know, when it comes right down to it, you get to have one body, one energy system. And if you burn it out, where do you get to live? Where do you go then? And oftentimes we make things that are not really important, but, oh, they have to get done. We make them urgent. And we leave the really important things left undone. And one of the really important things is your health and your well-being and your psychological stability, your physiological stability. And when you're doing deeper layers of work, like you've been really facing some big life issues and relationship issues, as you know, what's really important is giving yourself the space to rest and to process through the things that you are working on. And that might necessitate backing off some of the things that seem important, but when it comes to your health and your well-being, really aren't important. So to give yourself time and space to rest and recuperate and deal with what you're really delving into, especially when you're doing major life issues, it's important to do that. And, you know, like, that's just the way it is. And sometimes there are some things that are going to have to be let go of that the world puts pressure on and says, but what about this? But, you know, the person who pushes and pushes and pushes to respond to the world and then ends up in a hospital bed because they haven't taken care of themselves, now what about all those things that seemed important that the world wants from them? And they can't do any of them. So make sure you put your health right up there with your priorities on a daily basis, and you put it into your plan for the day as to how you're going to take care of your own rest, recuperation, nutrition, and, you know, and playtime as well. It's important to have that time to really recuperate and regroup on a physiological and on a psychological basis, especially when you're dealing with, you know, major issues in your life.
Mm-hmm.
It's important to reorder the priorities to really take the time to take care of yourself.
Okay. And when you talk about rest and recuperation, like, you're talking about, like, making sure you get the sleep you need, or maybe meditation as opposed to more worksheets. Give me a little bit more?
If you think about what it is that powers a human cell, what's the energy that the human cell needs? Like, you know, the energy coming into our house, you know, is 60 cycle, 120 or 240 volts, and that's the power supply we need in order for our houses to operate. Well, my offering is the power supply that's needed for the health and well-being of our own individual cellular structures is the energy of love. And the world will tell you to forget about that. Hey, get on board. There's a buck to be made. There's a job to be done. We need to press. We need to go. And, you know, the kind of pressures that the world puts on us, we oftentimes forget to take time to engage in cultivating our relationship with the energy that's most important to life. And just taking that time each day, like, you know, take first thing in the morning and take time to cultivate your relationship with the presence of love in you, and to recognize, and if you've been taught to function out of hostility or fear, or that's kind of been, you know, the family pattern, which is, you know, pretty pervasive in our culture, taking time just to cultivate your relationship with love every day is an urgent thing to do. And so that might look like meditation. Certainly rest and recuperation, allowing, you know, sufficient sleep for the brain to detoxify itself. There's some specialized cells in the brain that are basically like the brain's eliminators. They're called glial cells. And they don't start to reorient themselves to detoxifying and throwing wastes out of the brain until one has had about 7 or so hours of sleep. And if one doesn't get that, then these glial cells remain oriented in a way that they are not carrying out that function. And so one's efficacy in doing a job, you know, they become so stressed because the brain is becoming toxic due to the fact that they're not getting the detoxification process that they need. And, you know, oh, well, you know, I get up an extra hour early. Oh, well, I'm going to stay up late and not get that taken care of. And then, having that proper kind of sleep, eating a proper dietary regimen, drinking enough water to flush and clean and cleanse the structure, it's all important to staying in a healthy state, and then spending time each day. And, you know, not a bad idea to set an alarm on your watch, even if it's just, you know, I mean, first thing in the morning, for me personally, before I even go to bed, I start having a conversation with the presence of love in me and spending time with that. Opening, breathing, pardon me, opening and allowing that energy to move within my own physiology in a way that I pay attention and can actually feel it physically. I think that's an important part of each person's day who's going to live in true total health. And then, of course, the use of the tools, the use of, you know, we talked the other day, I don't know if you're on the show, and we talked about Yeshua's statement where he says, sufficient for the day are the evils thereof. And you look at that statement, you go, what the heck does that mean? Sufficient for the day are the evils thereof. And you can't get even a clue of what he was talking about in the Aramaic with those words. But what he was talking about was stress management. And that if we overload ourselves with stress, you know, if you talk to the average physician, you know, 90% or more of medical visits are really caused by excessive stress, because most people don't have a clue how to manage their stress. And when Yeshua says, you know, sufficient for the day are the evils thereof, the word evil there in that context means unripened or the incomplete projects thereof. And if somebody goes out with, you know, they've got a month of important projects in their mind, you know, minute one when they go off to do the job, there's an overwhelming energetic dynamic that happens that uses so many resources that one is not as efficient as they could be if they were managing their minds properly. That's why we've got a sheet called the Mind Goal Management Sheet to help people to clear out the stresses from a lifetime, to clear out the stresses from yesterday, so that all of the resources possible are available on a daily basis, and renew that process each day. That's what the Mind Goal Management Sheet and the workshop Getting the Stress You Need is about.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, nourishing yourself properly, and giving mm-hmm. yourself time for rest and relaxation.
Okay.
They'd all be factors in really taking care of yourself and strengthening yourself through the daily living of a life rather than becoming worn down by it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Thank you. That was... Yeah, I have used the Mind Goal Management Worksheet, it is helpful. But that kind of brings us to, if we still have time, unless there's somebody else that wants to jump in.
No, we're good. No, we're with you, young lady, for as long as we talk.
Okay, well, thank you.
So go for it.
Yeah. Okay, so another question that I have that's come up is, kind of is related to, I believe it was one of the 4-hour, why is this happening to me again, from way back, DVDs that I watched.
Right.
It talked about how, like, if I got this correctly, basically, if there's something in you, there's a situation within yourself that is also in another individual, then that situation will resonate, and you guys will end up in conflict. But if it's
conflicting information or energetic patterns, the tendency will be for, you know, I mean, people talk about a downward spiral, and what we want to do with this work is support people being a place where when they begin to interact with someone, they move into an upward spiral rather than a downward spiral. But if there's hostility in one mind and that hostility is intensified in one mind, it will tend to have the impact, if there's another mind nearby with hostility, just without even saying a word, just through energetic resonance to arouse that hostility in that other mind. And, you know, if you go back to Yeshua 2,000 years ago, this, you know, in essence, he's saying, in order to be a healthy, whole human being, what's most important? And, you know, the Greeks translated his words saying, well, you've got to have you've got to love your neighbor and you've got to love God. And that way, you know, that's how you get to love yourself. And that's been totally and completely misinterpreted. The word that was used in that particular passage was, you've got to have a thing called rachma. And in Aramaic, that was a filter in the frontal lobes of the brain that you have that active. And when that's active, hostility and fear can't move in you and therefore cannot be resonated in someone else, because it's got no impetus when the overriding energy is that of love. And of course, if one is used to living in a state of some form of hostility or fear, and you start moving toward a more plugged in, more connected space with love, then that hostility and fear is even more quickly going to come up for forgiveness and to be eradicated rather than playing out in the mind. So yeah, one condition set in a single mind will tend to resonate that same condition in any mind that's around it. And as you get conscious, if you realize there's somebody that triggers you, it becomes even more important. You know, I'm going to see this person tomorrow. I'm going to do my work and really be in that committed, connected space of love so that I don't fall into the trap of just being controlled by what another person resonates in me. And sometimes people recognize, you know, I've observed this many times over the years, people recognize that they can take over another person's mind by just, you know, resonating something that's unpleasant to them. And they'll do it. Just, you know, who knows what all the dynamics are behind it, whether it's a way to be in control or it's just plain meanness, you know, whatever dynamics are going on. So, again, that speaks to me to the importance of making sure you take responsibility for keeping that connection to love, for cultivating that connection to love on a daily basis so it's yours and it's always there to support you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I see the importance of that, and I'm starting to do better about being able to maintain that. I believe I am, through all the work I've done.
Awesome.
But what I'm wondering is that, so if I'm in that state, then someone could still project onto me, like they could project their own thoughts or have like an assumption about my behavior that isn't true or isn't accurate.
Yes.
Am I making any sense?
Yeah, when you look at the Why Is This Happening to Begin workshop that you mentioned, you know, the core of it is that when people live in denial, they're living in a game where their thoughts are, their words reflect that they believe someone else is responsible for what's happening inside of them, then they literally hide parts of their own minds from themselves. And then when they interact with another person and that person resonates the part of their own mind that they've hidden from themselves, they'll literally use that hidden content, and here's where projection occurs. You know, if you and I interact, and I've got some hidden hostility, and you resonate my hostility, and I'm in denial of it, no, I have no anger, I'm never going there, I don't want to deal with that, and you happen to resonate that, if I'm in that state of denial, what projection means is not that I'm going to put that anger on you, that's externalization. What projection means is I'll take my own internalized dissociated anger and I'll use it to build my brain's image of you. That's the projection. It's literally taking content of one's own brain cell structure and putting into our brain's perceptual construct of another person. And then we see this anger attached to this other person, so we're sure it must be theirs. Although at the same moment, we're the ones who are feeling it, but we're in denial of feeling it. But that's where the projection occurs. And of course, if somebody's doing that, there tends then to be some sort of put down or cajoling, something like that, that then will tend to trigger that other person if there's something that, you know, party two is not wanting to deal with. And if someone can trigger that in you, when you realize that, you know, when you let go of the denial, let go of the conversation that they're making you feel that way, and recognize that's what's going on in your physiology, it points to your next piece of work. You know, we can only be controlled by what we hide from ourselves. And if there's something we're hiding, and there's somebody that shows up that knows exactly, you know, how to hit that hot button, they're really giving us the gift of showing us the next piece of work. They're showing us, you know, if in interaction with someone, I go into a disease posture, it's my disease. And if they trigger it in me, in fact, they're really giving me a gift of giving me the chance to look at that, because when I really start to look at it and own it, I can then remove, I can forgive that dis-ease energy, and I'm going to benefit from it, even if their intention was to create disturbance and upset in me.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it really takes, you know, arriving at a place where you're 100% responsible for what's going on in your mind, no matter what everybody else says. And if you, mm-hmm. you know, if you find yourself turning your head to rage and scream at somebody when you thought you had all that handled, that's the time to go, oh, I still have some raging and screaming in me. Mm-hmm. Next piece of work, next worksheet, next responsibility communication opportunity, next codependent dynamic to look at.
Right. Okay. So I understand that and have been there many a times and realized then afterwards it's like, oh gosh, I got to do more. So there I am back and doing my own, doing more of my work. But then how, I know that you have like the communication tools. How is that the best way then to get that other individual to see? I mean, I don't know. Like, how do you manage that other individual? Because otherwise, I could see the relationship just breaking down completely. Because if they're thinking that you're just this horrible person, then I mean, what is one to do? You know, like, how do you manage
well,
that?
You know,
without
you
breaking down a relationship.
If you went back to day one of our radio show 11 years ago, and Jeannie was just telling me, she calculated, we've got about 3,800 hours of archives of the radio show. So if you went back 11 years ago to hour one on the radio show and listened to all 3,800 hours, you would never hear me say a word other than to answer the question you just asked. Every word I've spoken about is the answer to that question. And that is, you take every tool you've got and you put it to work. So it might look like, and the responsibility communication is powerful. In fact, you know, Magda's in the Mind Shifters and Still Point breathing group with you, and you might make contact with her because the responsibility communication over the years has been her favorite tool. And actually in our last codependence to interdependence workshop, she chose to be the person who did the responsibility communication process and just opened some things up beautifully and then intensive. And it really moved some energy. So you might communicate with Magda and get some guidance, some of her input and insight as to what she's found with using it, because it's been one of her favorite tools, and it's a powerful one. But then so is each and every other tool in context when it's time to use it. And, you know, I've had people who hate doing worksheets, and, you know, after years of being engaged in this work and never touching a worksheet, have sat down, done a worksheet, and all of a sudden found it's become their favorite tool. So each and every tool has a place, and it depends on each individual what, you know, what their particular skill is, what tool really appeals to them. But the responsibility communication tool is extremely, extremely powerful. And again, it might be worth a quick call to Magda to just say hello and see if she's got any input for you on that. And we are down to the last 30 seconds or so the show is going to cut us off. But maybe we could pick up the conversation, if it works for you, tomorrow at the same time and continue and see what support we can be.
Okay. Yeah. At this point, unfortunately, I have work, but tomorrow. But you never know. I might have a cancellation, and it'll free me up. So.
Okay.
Thank you.
When there is a space. All right. Blessings. Take care, everybody. Thank you for being with us. Create the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Blessings.